On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we debate who the best team in the NL is after the Braves and Brewers sweep over the weekend, the Dodgers and Roki Sasaki looking pretty freaking good. Then we react to Manny Machado's anti-analytics comments. Tarek Skubal looks pretty good in a rehab outing, and so much more on this weekend recap edition of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that agrees with Manny Machado and thinks that we should get analytics out of the way. I'm Jake Mintz. That's George Schusterman. And what even is WCCVBB?
We're going to find out on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. We are going to do a deep exploration on whatever it was that Manny Machado was complaining about last week. But that is not going to be our first topic because the San Diego Padres are not one of the best teams in the National League. Our opener is, who is the best team in the National League?
Entering the season, it was Dodgers and then Gap. The Los Angeles juggernaut was the consensus best team in the National League, with all due respect to the Milwaukee Brewers, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the preseason version of the New York Mets. I think everyone was in agreement that the two-time defending World Series champs were the club to beat. And so far this season, one club has done more beating of other clubs than the Dodgers, and that is the Atlanta Braves. So to start this episode, we wanted to take those Braves who swept over the weekend, take those Milwaukee Brewers who swept over the weekend, and take those Los Angeles Dodgers who did not sweep over the weekend because the Los Angeles Angels were too good to overcome. We want to take those three teams, and we want to see if we can determine right now, on June 8th, who is tops in the National League.
Yeah, I mean, these three teams have really separated themselves in a lot of regards. The Braves do have the best record in baseball at 45-21. Dodgers right behind them at 42-24. Milwaukee 40-23. These are the three best run differentials in baseball as well. For those interested in that as a measure, Braves plus 116, Brewers plus 105.
Manny Machado not interested in that.
Hey,
statistic.
Manny Machado, sorry, he's a B-block topic.
Sorry,
I know the
I'll Padres making jokes.
Are still. So we're gonna get there. We're gonna get there. The Dodgers plus 133. For those curious, I think the other reason why we wanted to have this conversation is that this was not a weekend where the best teams in the AL, who have all been uninspiring at times anyway, gave us a lot to get excited about, right? Rays dropped a series to the Marlins. Yankees and Red Sox played a rainout split. The Mariners got embarrassed on Sunday. The Guardians lost a series in Texas. So the who's the best team in the AL is interesting in its own way. But the National League, these three National League teams along the way have given us reason to be like, wait a minute, like, is this the best team in baseball? And because of the results over the weekend, we're going to dig into it. So
yeah,
let's go through the results a little bit more specifically first. Yeah,
they also played three of the worst teams on earth. Right now, with all due respect to the Pirates.
Well, I was going to say, the Pirates have certainly been that for the last 10 years. They are still trying to, that's quite the thing to say right as you were about to go to Pittsburgh. It's really bold return from Europe and immediately label the Pirates, who have been much better, as one of the worst teams in baseball.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yes, the Pirates still have the stench of us assuming that they are one of the worst teams in baseball. They certainly had a disappointing showing this weekend in Atlanta. That said, Atlanta has been terrific. And I guess let's start with them, because I do think as far as opponents goes, the Pirates were much better than the Rockies and the Angels. So you got to give them credit. Martin Perez, who has become a weird mainstay of this Braves rotation as they wait for Spencer Schwellenbach and Hurston Waldrop to return. He outpitches Mitch Keller on Friday. They win that one. Spencer Strider was pretty good, but the real story on Saturday was that Braxton Ashcraft, who's been terrific for Pittsburgh, he was not very good on Saturday. Dom Smith hits a big homer. Braves win 6-3 again. And then on Sunday, they win a closer one, 3-2. They use an opener. Pittsburgh uses an opener for Bubba Chandler, which is generally works, but Bryce Elder continues his terrific season. Michael Harris has a bases clearing pinch hit double. That is the difference as the Braves sweep the Pirates. So let's dig in on Atlanta a little bit here. They have basically had the best record in baseball the whole season. I'm not sure if they let that up at any point. They did lose a series here and there. I think the case for Atlanta as the best team is that they've been the best team the whole time. They've had so few slip-ups, have only lost two series all season. They've won 18 of their 21 series. No team in baseball has won more than, I guess the Brewers have won 14 series, the Dodgers have won 13 series. So Atlanta has, from a performance standpoint, from a wins and losses standpoint, from a consistency standpoint, this has been the best team in baseball. But yes. Do you think qualitatively they have a case as well?
I think they do because of their ability to continue winning without Drake Baldwin. Drake Baldwin was simply one of the best hitters on the planet for the first 6-7 months of the season. He goes on the IL, I think on May 18th with an oblique issue. And since being out, the Braves catchers have been like otherworldly terrible. They've been playing Sandy Leone and hashtag not my president Chadwick Tromp and Austin Wins, and those guys predictably have not been hitting. Sandy Leone is 3-for-36 with three singles and no walks. You before the show described him as he is a bullpen catcher playing every day, and it doesn't matter because the Braves offense is good enough to overcome that, and their starting pitching has been sufficient, and their bullpen has just been sensational. Chris Sale rocking a 2.23 in 72 at the age of 37. Bryce Elder is a different version of himself than the pitcher that was a punchline for the last couple of seasons. Spencer Strider has not been himself, but he has been viable and average, and that is valuable in and of itself. And then the bullpen has been dynamite. And so I do think that this team, based upon what we've seen, and this is not a hot take, this team could totally win the National League and end up in the World Series. Now, what has to happen between now and then to get to where the Dodgers are at? I think there's really three main things, okay? One is Austin Riley. Austin Riley has been disappointing all season long. There was a brief blip where it looked like he could get back to what he'd been. He's kind of fallen back down. Even as Ronald Acuna Jr. has woken up and become Ronald Acuna Jr. once again, Riley is the guy where it's like they could use one more bat. Now, they've been fine. Do I think that Jorge Mateo and Mauricio Dubon are going to be able to be relied upon and maybe even Dom Smith in October? Not necessarily. They need Riley to be that guy. That's number one. Number two is Strider. Like, are they going to get an elevated version of Spencer Strider as the season crawls along? And then three is, are they going to get Spencer Schwellenbach back off the IL? I think if, and does, what does he look like when he returns? I think if they get two of those three things settled by the NLCS, then they have a very strong shot of knocking off the Dodgers.
Yeah, I agree. I still think this is going to be a team that we certainly are talking about a lot going into the deadline. Anthopoulos, last year was so weird for the Braves to be so far off the map because of how much they've just been a main character in the National
League.
It's like, all right, we're talking about the NL. We're talking about the Braves. That's how it works. Their farm system has been one of the worst for the last few years, but it's had a lot of breakouts that could give them some ammo to go get something done. I think the other interesting part in terms of upside with Atlanta is getting Drake Baldwin back, and then getting Drake Baldwin back and having him back at the level that he was with Ronald Acuna. Because that's the thing. For those first month, 5 weeks, it was Baldwin and Olsen. And really not. I mean, Ozzy was playing well. We know Riley wasn't really hitting. And Dom Smith. But like Mike Yastrzemski, who was a big offseason addition, this is the other strange part about the Braves, is some of the things that are going terribly wrong. I mean, Ha-Sung Kim is back making $20 million. And I know he was injured also to start the season. He's got 5 hits in 15 games. He's essentially just this like defensive replacement, which is very strange. You know, the production from Dubon and Mateo has been really, really nice. how to depend. That's where Riley comes back, because he's the one we know is going to stay in the lineup every day. He has to pick it up. They have to trade for another starter, whether they're getting Schwellenbach back or not. And yeah, Strider remains a huge X factor. So, but I love the bullpen. I think that's something we could have seen coming, them loading up, signing Suarez and bringing back Iglesias. But like, look what Dylan Lee's been doing. Look what, like, Tyler Kinley is a really good reliever. Didier Fuentes, who is the youngest pitcher in baseball, I think pretty comfortably. I'm pretty sure he's 21 or 22. 20. Sorry. He turns 21 later this month. So he is the youngest pitcher in baseball. He probably could be a starter long term, but they're using him in the bullpen right now. He's been pretty good. So there's a lot more upside with Atlanta. There's also parts of this roster that look pretty bad. Once they get healthy, though, I do think they can challenge the Dodgers for sure.
Let's pivot to the Brewers, who took all three games over the Rockies this weekend, which, you know, it's taking care of business. They win 9-7 in 10 innings on Friday. They win 7-1 behind another phenomenal Jacob Mizorowski start on Saturday. Then they put up 7 in the 6th inning to finish the sweep on Sunday to win 12-4. Highlight of this weekend for Milwaukee was Jacob Mizorowski acting like an adult, Jordan. He was in a bit of a sticky situation, I believe, in the 7th inning on Saturday's game. Runners on the corners with one out. Brewers up 4. Against the Rockies, and you see Pat Murphy, Brewers skipper, start to crawl out, start to inch out to take him out. And Mizorowski turns to the dugout and hits him with the no, no, no. Murphy leaves him in the game. Mizorowski works out of the jam, fired up on his way off the mound. Here's why I loved this moment so much. You see Murphy is like internally smiling, seeing Mizorowski telling him to stay in the dugout. Because Jacob Mizorowski has been a baby deer and is in many ways still a baby deer, right? And for him to exhibit a level of, you know, MF-er, a level of mean, a level of insistent, a level of, you know, personal, like almost aggression and passion. Like, we've seen him be excited about pitching well, but we've never seen him be adamant in this way to someone like Pat Murphy, right? And so I think this was a very cool sort of narrative development for one of the game's main characters now.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that to your point about Murph loving every second of it, there's probably also part of it that's like, yeah, of course I'm not taking him out. Like, let's make him want it, you know? Let's push him and goes. Make him think I'm taking him out. So I love that. I think we'll zoom out and talk about the whole roster. I think as for this weekend, not to super overreact, I do think that they deserve credit for surviving the chaos of Coors Field, particularly in that first game where
Absolutely.
The teams combined for 12 runs in the 9th and 10th innings and the Brewers still found a way to win. There's usually weird stuff that happens in Colorado, no matter how good the team you are or how bad the Rockies are. So for them to overcome that, still find ways to sweep this series makes a difference, especially this year where, you know, the NL Central is going to push them a little bit. But even if we're talking what we're really talking about here for all of this, and certainly we bring the Dodgers back in, is, you know, seeding in the National League postseason. If we assume that all three of these teams are going to cruise and win their division, which the Fangraphs playoff odds tell us is certainly likely to happen, then where are they relative to each other? And if the Brewers have a better record by the Dodgers by one game, now, as we know, you can say, well, this clearly didn't matter last year, and we're aware of that. But that said, if we are talking, comparing these teams and thinking about home field and seeding in the postseason, a one difference might be surviving that one game on Friday in Colorado where stuff got really weird. Now, let's talk about Milwaukee's case for being the best team. I think in past years, we've kind of rolled our eyes and said, all right, well, your record is really good. Your run differential is really good. You're winning all these games. Do you have the superstars to make this happen? Mizorowski has emphatically told us yes. They have one of the best pitchers in baseball. When he is pitching, no matter who they're facing, they have a really good chance to win the game. Kyle Harrison has emerged as a version of that as well. Certainly a shorter track record, but the stuff speaks for itself. The numbers speak for itself. That is a pitcher we're really excited about. And again, frankly, if you're comparing that to maybe not the Dodgers, but if you're comparing Milwaukee's pitching situation with those two compared to Atlanta's, I think it's pretty similar. I'd rather have Miz and Harrison than Chris Sale and Bryce Elder right now. Now, Atlanta might have Strider come up and show more, and even Grant Holmes, compared to what happens beyond that. Because that's the thing about Milwaukee right now is, okay, what's going on beyond that, right? Brandon Woodruff keeps dealing with injuries, unsurprisingly. Hopefully he comes back. Logan Henderson has looked great when he's been on the mound, but he can't avoid the injured list. Brandon Sproat, who... frankly, I've been skeptical of for years and continues to kind of disappoint me, but he's somehow still in the rotation and has a 6 ERA, so that one's not going awesome. But then when we go to the offensive side, this is where they deserve credit, right? Bryce Turang has become an MVP candidate. There's no other way to paint it anymore. He is that. He has a 147 OPS plus. He's got 9 homers, 11 steals. He's an awesome, awesome, awesome player. We know Churio has that kind of potential. We know William Contreras has gotten down ballot MVP votes before. Yelich is at least an above average hitter. Jake Bowers, I think, is the story we have totally glossed over. Dude, in terms of the Brewers this season. This is another guy with a 148 OPS plus, basically playing every day. This is not just, to my knowledge, this is not just a platoon situation. Really awesome. One of our favorite guys in the sport, and clearly found a home there in Milwaukee. This is his third year there, and he's been useful the last two seasons in a role. This year, he's downright good. And so do I believe he's now an all-star level hitter? I don't know, but he's certainly performing like that, and it is raising the ceiling of this offense for sure.
I mean, you also sort of gloss over Churio.
Sure.
Like, he's been so good. Like, it's a 131 yeah. WRC plus, yeah. Right? Like, we're no longer...
After missing a month.
After missing a month, like, the ceiling is still so high where our expectations unfairly of this guy are MVP candidate, and he's probably not that quite yet. But, like, had he not missed a month and he had been playing like this all year, he's probably an all-star, right? And that gives the Brewers two everyday players that are all-star position players. There's a Jake Bowers all-star argument. Wow. I can't believe I said that sentence. There is a Jake Bowers all-star argument. Good for that guy. That is incredible. And then Garrett Mitchell has been really hot. Do I think this is the best team in the National League? I still do not. William Contreras is still not looking like the best version of himself, I think, is really relevant. Who the hell is the third starter on this team is the biggest concern I have. Now, I do believe that Milwaukee will patch its way there. If you take a look at, okay, so like what went wrong for them in the NLCS against the Dodgers last year, right? They could not hit against that pitching staff, part of which was because the Dodgers were just they were just on it. They were on a roll, on a heater at that moment, and there were very few teams that were going to compete with it. But they looked overmatched. Does this team look capable of handling a locked-in Dodgers pitching staff? I think it looks more capable than it did last year. I still think they're a bat short.
I agree, and that's why I will, to that point, I mean, statistically, the Brewers are good at everything except their 29th in home runs, right? And this was a talking point last year. They're third. It's absurd. They're third in runs per game, and they're 29th in home runs. Okay. I mean, they're second in OBP, second in stolen bases. We know the pitching has generally been good. The bullpen, I will say, has been more good than elite, but it's still a good unit. I will also point out, which is strange, and I think something I know you dig into, and maybe we're still talking small sample, all things considered. Defensively, they have rated as fine. They are not grading out as elite on defense this year the way that they have been the last couple seasons. So that's certainly something to monitor. I think my big picture thing with the Brewers is you have one of the best farm systems in baseball. Go do something. I don't know what it is. Again, we'll get into the specific trade deadline targets once we get there. Maybe it is a bat. Maybe it is say screw it. Let's go get Tarek Skubal. But I hope that they are aggressive. Because if you learned anything from last year, you're going to need a little bit more oomph, a little bit more star power if you're going to keep up with Los Angeles, who we are about to talk about. But I still think that the Brewers, I feel better about them this year than last year, which is an interesting thing to say, right? They don't have Freddie Peralta. There are some pieces that are not there anymore. I don't think they're going to have the best record in baseball like they did last year. I do feel better about them this year than last year, though, which is I guess good. I think it's good.
Home runs.
It's a weird team.
Home runs play in October against common, you know, perception. Like there's this narrative that you need to put the ball in play in October. And like stats have shown that that is not true. Like you have to hit the ball out because there are fewer hits. It's better. You're facing better pitching. It's harder to string hits together. And so therefore the ball going over the fence is more valuable. And I think that they do have more guys that I feel comfortable in crafting a moment. Like I think that Churio and Terang going, like becoming this now, I could see them turning around an Ohtani heater, you know, in game two with a guy on in a way that maybe I didn't feel about it last year. So let's move to those Dodgers. The only one of these three teams that didn't sweep over the weekend. What frauds, what losers. On Friday, Roky Sasaki, 7 scoreless, 10 Ks. In the pride hat, call him Woky Sasaki. Best start of his big league career. And the Dodgers win 1-0. Yeah, I thought about that one this morning. I felt really good about it. I didn't write it down because I didn't want you to see the joke. But
it's a good joke.
You know, I'll take victory lap for Woky Sasaki.
That was great. Good. Roky, wear the pride hat every time. It's working.
Always. This is great. The opposite of Blake Treinen. Right.
He should be wearing this.
Who won't wear this?
He should be wearing this
hat
in August. Right. Like, come on. This is a no-brainer.
It raises an interesting question. It raises a very interesting question. If Blake Treinen's allowed to not wear the pride hat, couldn't Roky be allowed to wear it all the time?
100%. Absolutely. At least for the rest of the month. My goodness. Right. I know they had it for Pride.
For the rest
of
Pride month.
But yeah. Yeah, I mean, Woky, this is
locked in.
It's we love it. So, you know, jokes aside, this is great. This is why you wear the pride hat, because we're seeing this is exposure. These are positive highlights of Roky Sasaki that we get to watch over and over and over and over. If Roky Sasaki goes on to become one of the best pitchers in baseball, we will come back and be like, oh, remember that start? Remember that start on Pride Night in June of 2026 when he figured it out, when he was sitting 99, when that splitter was absolutely splitting and the slider was sliding and the velo was there and the mechanics were all in sync and the Angels were really bad, just like they always are. But Roky was the story of the weekend for the Dodgers. Right.
Yeah.
Roky is the story of the weekend for the Dodgers, and we'll dig into him more. That game ends up being shockingly close. They win on a Freddie Freeman walk-off home run. Off Kirby Yates, who is very bad. And then on Saturday, I mean, oh my gosh. It's absurd that the Dodgers didn't sweep the series. But on Saturday, the Dodgers scored 9 runs in the first inning against Kohanowitz and Brent Suter. Kohanowitz, who then admits after the game, my elbow's been hurt for the last 3 games. I've just been pitching through it. Okay, great. Love to hear that. Yamamoto goes 8 innings, an earned run there. Dodgers win 9-2. But then on Sunday, just weird stuff happens. Dodgers going for the season series sweep over the Angels. However, Emmett Sheehan has a tough one, and the bottom of the Angels order combines for 13 hits. Their bottom four hitters have 13 hits, including a 5-for-5 day from catcher Sebastian Rivero. Angels win 13-5.
I was watching this live,
which is why the Dodgers. Yeah, so this is why the Dodgers.
I was watching the Sunday game live
team instead of our first
team. I highly recommend, Jordan, if you have time today, go back and watch the broadcast of the top of the 7th inning, an inning in which the Angels scored 6 runs. Angels broadcaster, play-by-play guy, Wayne Randazzo. Each time the bottom of the order guys got another hit, he was losing his mind. It would be like Sebastian Rivero, dribbler up the middle. And he's like, and another one for Rivero. It all-time great watch. Highly recommend. The Angels avoid the sweep. Their best play, right around the corner. Okay. It's just a cold stretch.
Oh yeah.
Halos are going to get hot. Okay.
It's coming. It's coming. I think they showed us
right
there.
That's
actually such a funny way to win, is to have all your bad players hit well, because like, what are you going to say? I guess you could, the spin zone is, well, man, look how deep we are, man. Look at this roster that we've collected. We got our scrubs,
Neto, Trout, Meckler, Peraza, Shanuel going 2-4
Sorry.
30.
Sorry, excuse me. Did you say Wade Meckler was batting cleanup?
Wade Meckler in the three hole. The three hole. Neto, Trout, Meckler. Using Meckler to protect Trout.
Oh.
I love the Angels so much.
Okay. Sorry. I feel bad because I know let me just quickly Wade Meckler.
We're just dunking on the Angels. Yeah. This is not the conversation. I like it when there's one team that doesn't know what it's doing because it's funny and it's a great foil to all the other teams. And I hope the Angels never change. And I know that's not fair to everybody out there living and dying with the Halos, but I like it. I think it's funny. I like that they think they know what they're doing. They are. It is a bummer because the best player of a generation is the best player on this team. And that makes me sad. I get it. But I feel terrible for our Orange County, but this is wonderful content. The Dodgers.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just, you know, I feel it sucks. Wade Meckler, what a great story. Grew up an Angels fan. It's okay, but sometimes we have this where guys, there's like cool stories in baseball, and then it's like
Drew Maggi.
They get right. Well, that's an interesting example, but it's Drew like, Maggi was never
you got up
third.
With the Pirates because they stink.
Well, right. There's versions of that. What I'm getting more as is when it gets like overexposed. I mean, this is true in a lot of things with memes, with inside jokes, sure. Whatever. It's like, oh, wait, like Wade Meckler comes up. He grew up loving the Angels. Oh, what a story. He gets a bunch of hits when he and then it's like, no, but he shouldn't be batting third. No, that. Whoa. Hold on. Whoa. Slow down now. Like, whoa.
Easy.
Okay. Go back to the Dodgers. Go ahead.
All right. So the Dodgers are the best team. In the National League. And they are until someone proves otherwise. Shohei Ohtani is good at hitting again. Andy Pages is one of the most remarkable stories of the season. Will Smith is kind of mid now. Doesn't really matter. This team is incredible. And Roki, dude, I'm sorry. Shohei Ohtani has a 5.51 ERA plus.
And wow, that makes his 163 OPS plus look pretty boring. So, yeah, Jake just got stopped in his tracks by the Shohei Ohtani baseball reference page. Here's
Manny
the thing
Machado
with Dodgers,
not impressed.
I just as we did with Atlanta and we did with Milwaukee. Okay, where's the upside? How does this team get better? And I mean, frankly, there's just a lot of things going wrong. Mookie Betts has a 6.14 OPS. You mentioned Will Smith, very mid, very not great. And we know Dalton Rushing has picked up some of that slack, but Kyle Tucker is making how much money to hit 236, 332, 384? And like, honestly,
no one cares.
This might not even be the best, a blip on
my radar.
No, is anybody having any sort of like contact? Now, it's October.
This is literally why Kyle Tucker signed there. This is why yes. Kyle Tucker signed with the Dodgers. Because yes. He could pop out a 102 OPS plus for the first couple of months and no one would care. And that's all he wants.
If he had this line, can you imagine if he had this line with Toronto? Oh my God. It would be like, what have we done? We have
He'd
harmed
be in Buffalo.
The Canadian economy to sign Kyle Tucker. This is crazy. This is
Rogers
and no
is
one
going
be,
under.
No one would be mad at Vlad. It would be like Vlad. All right, you're slugging 380 sure. or whatever. No. Kyle Tucker, shame on you. And by the way, Tyler Glasnow just got moved to the 60-day injury list. He ain't coming back anytime soon. Blake Snell made one one start, right back on the IL. Edwin Diaz, heard of him. He's making a lot of money. He's not pitching right now.
Forgot about him. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember him? Which brings us back to Roki. Now, I actually want to say one more thing. Justin Wroblewski. Wow. Like, I think when you looked at the homegrown guys and you said, who's going to take a step forward here? I think there was more optimism that Sheehan was going to be that guy. He's been okay. I would say he's been disappointing. Certainly, obviously, a bad start over the weekend. I'd say he's disappointed relative to expectations, but you'd still have most teams would happily take Emmett Sheehan in their rotation. I mean, to be very clear. But what Justin Wroblewski has become, because early in the season, he was doing it kind of smoke and mirrors and you know, not a lot of strikeouts. He's not striking out the world now, but he's now unlocked I don't know if you've noticed, he somehow figured something out with his mechanics in the last three or four starts where he's throwing really hard. Strikeouts have ticked up. Mm. The walks have gone down.
Finally, something and, good.
Yeah, I'm so glad that something worked out for the Dodgers. But Wroblewski has been an impact pitcher. Yamamoto, it's so funny. Yamamoto goes 8 innings, 1 run. He's still like 10th in the National League in F4 among starting pitchers. Like, he's having a pretty damn good season. He's just not up to have doing historic stuff, so we're not really talking about him. But Roki, though, this is the one, because the variance with Roki has been the ultimate wild card. And for the first time since he got here, sure, he had some spurts in relief last year where it was like, oh, there's Roki. This is what it was supposed to look like. Seating 99, the fastball shape is better. The splitter is unbelievable. And by the way, the splitter is unbelievable because the fastball is actually good now. The splitter was
That's the whole thing.
What made that pitch so amazing is that it was still pretty effective when he was terrible for the last year and a half. But now if he has the velocity back and the fastball is playing like it is, well, now you have no chance against that pitch. And now it's, we can say, I don't know. This is a massive deal. If Roki's going to start looking like this, he has to stay healthy. He still has a lot to prove. He's got to do against teams that aren't the Angels. But people might get tired of us talking about this, but if he has now shown us the range of one of the worst pitchers in baseball, which is what he looked like for extended periods, to now what we just saw on Friday, which could be one of the best. And that is not an insignificant development.
This is why we've been talking about him so much. This is why you talk about this guy, right? Because the ceiling was always this. And I think that the concern was real at the beginning of the year, because I think there was a world, there was a path in which his struggles on the field contributed to kind of some sort of approach, mental, like, inconsistencies, and you could see that kind of spiraling on a guy, right? Yep. Like, should he be demoted? Does he belong on this team? Now, the Dodgers had the leeway and the runway to give him because they are the Dodgers. But remember, this is the best pitching development group, at least at the big league level, really maybe we have ever seen, right? I think, yep. I feel I mean, like case, one case of the best. This is what, yeah. It, like, Mark Pryor and, like, that group, what they have done over the years is just unthinkable, right? It's unbelievable. And so I'm not like floored that they've gotten Roki Sasaki to a point where he looks like this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's weird because everything with Roki has been so strange, because it's not like they just came up. I mean, maybe they did just come up with ideas. How much of it is just on him to take to the instruction?
I don't think they just came up with ideas. I think what the Dodgers, like, what they've understood is that they have time with Roki. Yeah. They have time. They were, and that was a luxury to show him what wasn't working and why. The best way to get someone to listen to you in life is for them to fail, is for them to struggle, to scuffle, right? Like, that's how you get buy-in with anything, right? And I think that the Dodgers, Mark Pryor, Connor McGinnis, that whole group, like, I think they understood that dynamic. And they knew that eventually Roki would come back to them, right? And I think that is, I'm going to go see them this week and I'll ask around and find out more. But, like, Roki seems to have taken a step forward, not just like on the mound with his mechanics, but also with his attitude. Dave Roberts, Dodgers manager, he says stuff, dude. Dave says stuff. He had a kind of a wild quote where he said, in talking about Roki, where he's at now, "We all felt sorry for him and sad for him, and now he's arrived as an adult and as a major league player." That is kind of striking, because you're saying that, like, you had a child for you.
I mean, and let's be honest,
some, like, things that I had heard about Roki, where, like, a lot of the dudes around the Dodgers would be like, "This guy's kind of a baby. He's kind of a child. He's pretty pouty." And like, now I'm sure the language barrier was part of that, but seems like he is kind of getting more integrated into being a real member of this team.
And it's also very possible that the Dodgers knew that all along. Remember, the context of all of this is still absurd, because it's not like they had to give him $150 million. It's a different calculus. They were able to sign him. Sure, they used their whole international bonus pool, but the risk reward is undeniable. Even if you knew he was any sort of had any amount of attitude problem off the field, let alone injury history, let alone mechanical inconsistencies and all the other things.
But yeah,
this is the whole point. You get one start like this, you're seeing why everyone would be trying to get this guy. The fact that it took a year and a half to get there is compelling and weird and whatever.
Right.
But I think this will be my last question about Roki, and then we'll take a break. Now it's just a matter of like, because before the year, if you projected forward, we all kind of said, okay, they're going to keep him in the rotation. We think he's going to end up back in the bullpen at some point, even if he stays in the rotation once we get to the postseason. They have five better starters.
Does he start
than
a
him.
Playoff game?
Does he start a playoff game? Where is he in that mix? I mean, there's so many things that are going to happen with that. Glasnow's health, Snell's health, Robleski's consistency. What happens with Sheehan? I'm just going to say the name River Ryan, so I make sure I do, so that if when he's part of this conversation in a few months, that we come back and we don't realize we didn't say River Ryan's name. But
Tarek Skubal at the deadline.
Roki, where is Roki in this mix? Is so compelling, because I think that Ohtani guy's pretty good. He's going to probably pitch. Yamamoto, I feel pretty good. I think he's going to pitch. Arguing what the rest of the Dodgers rotation looks like after those two, if they can slot it the way that they want, is very, very, very interesting when we sit here and, you know, have a conversation on June 8th.
All right, break time.
Let's take a break. But before we do, let us remind you that the all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Make picks each round, earn points, climb the leaderboard, play solo, create a private group with your friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us, soccer experts. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em, yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. Jake just got back from Europe. He was doing some research.
Scouting.
Who you got?
Oh, scouting.
Who you got?
Jordan, just so you know, I lived with the soccer team in college, right?
Oh, true.
And I have been in a group chat called USMNT Fan TV for about 8 years, where people are complaining about, like, you know, Brandon Aaronson and Pochettino and like all these very niche. So I am tangentially taking this content in. And as a result, I will be smoking everybody in the soccer pick'em. My World Cup pick to win it all? Let's talk about that on Wednesday. And then after the break, we'll talk about Tarek Skubal. How does that work? That works for you? Works for me?
Sounds
talk
good.
In a second.
Do it.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the Midwest League. Tigers took 2 out of 3 over the Mariners at home in a series where Josh Naylor went full heel. Kevin McGonigal walked it off. The Mariners did not prove themselves to be the best team in the American League, at least yet. But I would like to focus our sights on West Michigan, where the High A White Caps play. Tarek Skubal, he of the Skubal Scope, the Nano Needle, made his first rehab outing against the Dayton Dragons on Sunday in what seemed to be just a remarkably cool atmosphere. Tarek Skubal is the best pitcher in the world. He is also like one of the most famous people in Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, sure.
He is a big deal.
Sure.
And for him to get to do a rehab start for the West Michigan Whitecaps, who I believe, I don't know the actual city they play in. I believe they're in like the Grand Rapids area.
Correct.
For Tarek Skubal to play in person in a minor league park in front of a bunch of people who really care about him, who care about the Tigers, who don't get to see him that often, this is like the why of minor league baseball for me. So that's that part of it. Should we talk about Tarek Skubal, the best pitcher on the planet, and his very unique road back to big league success?
Yeah, I think we should. And I think we should also just mention the circumstances here were rather serendipitous. You have to appreciate it. He was initially planning on making his rehab outing with AAA Toledo, who I believe was on the road. But because of weather, they were like, well, we can't have this interrupt us. It's going to be a beautiful day in West Michigan. So let's send him down to the Whitecaps, where the locals kind of send him over.
Over. Yeah.
Well, down.
It's not south. Down. It's really...
I know. West, I'm saying down and level.
Send him down and level.
West in geography. Yes, west in geography. And also, you got to say, you think the Tigers are having a tough season. West Michigan, 19-37 coming into this game. So they were having a tough year. So the fans have just been looking for anything to get excited about, just like the Tigers fans with the big league club. And Tarek Skubal comes to town. And he throws five scoreless innings, throws 54 pitches, and throws 99, and looks like Tarek Skubal.
Sold out event at LMCU Ballpark, which is in Comstock, Michigan. Comstock Park, mm-hmm. Michigan. There were like fake tickets being scalped. Like this became something of an event. I watched all of the local Grand Rapids sports like anchors. Reports this morning, some wonderful stuff, just really good content. I highly recommend giving that a look. But yeah, Skubal looked like Skubal, man. Like the heater was there. He wasn't 100% crisp in the early going, but again, like he got elbow surgery a month ago, and it's going to take a little bit of time. But all things considered, this was a big step forward.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting about Skubal is just how many different people are watching this with interest, you know, because of just what this surgery could mean, what this could mean for the trade deadline, what this could mean for the Tigers. They finally have a weekend of inspiration, of confidence building on the field. Again, still quite far back in the standings. They are now 9.5 back, tied with the Royals in last place.
They have a worse record than the Mets. They're worse. They have a worse record than the Mets. They
have a worse record than the Mets. But hey, positive spin. You're in the American League. You're 5.5 games out of a wild card spot. Sure.
So are the Mets.
Skubal's certainly looking. So are the Mets. So you could say Mets only 5 games out of a wild card spot. Oh, man.
Whoa.
Mets are feeling good. Okay. No, Mets. We're going to get the Mets in a second. But the point is as awful as it has been for Detroit, and I stand by the fact that when you're 12 games under, you're 16 games under, You can't afford many more, even 2 or 3 game losing streaks.
No.
If you're Tarek Skubal and you love the Tigers and you know you're the best pitcher in the world, you're looking at 5.5 games and saying, so what? Like, first of all, 2 years ago, they did the opposite. But what they did 2 years ago was even way crazier than coming back from 5.5 games at the beginning of June. So I'm sure he thinks, all right, I'm just going to come back and I'm going to pitch us back to the postseason and I'll start a game in the postseason again and whatever. But the trade chatter will continue. I think we don't have to have that conversation right now. But the point is just, and then when you factor in just this revolutionary medical procedure, it's shocking to have elbow surgery a month ago in any form and to be out there throwing 99 a month later is wild. He was very clear. He said, okay, everyone wonders, is he going to pitch? Is he starting in Detroit this weekend? Yeah. I'm very intrigued about this, too, because the Tigers are going to be in Cleveland this weekend. So is he just going to be ready? A lot of this is going to depend on how he bounces back today. On the one hand, you don't want to rush him because all of this is new. He's not following any sort of precedent. There's no rehab timeline the way that you have with Tommy John where it's like, okay, this is how it works. If you feel this way, maybe you add an extra day. So maybe he starts this weekend in Cleveland. Maybe not.
Jordan, if
it also goes back to what I said before. For Detroit, you need to tear school back as soon as possible. Like that you are still trying to make up a lot of ground, but you also don't want to be reckless.
If he makes one more start, it will probably be on Sunday at home for the Toledo Mudhens against St. Paul. That is backyard baseball night at what I believe is Fifth Third Field. That is Jordan Schusterman needs to get in the car. That is kind of might be a must do for you.
Well,
what is that? What's
right.
the drive for you to Toledo? Like 1 hour and 20?
Yes. I'm not going to get into it. I know it's true. That's true. Maybe I should just bike it as you well. Know? I'm not going to get into my weird logistics for this weekend, but I hope that I'm able to see Tarek Skubal pitch somewhere.
Just say.
The point is, whatever happens next. Well, not whatever happens next. Hopefully he doesn't wake up today feeling, oh my God, my elbow hurts. Assuming that he is okay. And we will hear an update from him in the next few days for sure. This is a remarkable development. It's just when you think about how we felt about the Tigers and Skubal when this news first came to where here we are a little over a month later, it's just an astonishing sequence.
I would like to do a 2-minute rant on the term Skubal scope, if that's okay. I'm going to kind of feel this out in real time. Okay.
Okay.
Tommy John surgery is named after Tommy John, the pitcher. Tommy John did not come up with the surgery, and yet it is named after him. Now, Tommy John deserves some credit for being willing to effectively act as a cadaver, if that is the correct word, as a test subject, as a hamster for this. Cadaver is definitely the wrong word, but you get my point. Tommy John got the name because he was willing to be the test subject. Frank Jobe did the surgery. Skubal scope is an awesome name for this. And Scott Boris, Skubal's agent, who presumably came up with Skubal scope, whoever came up with it, it's a great name. It rolls off the tongue. And while Tarek Skubal deserves credit for being brave enough to undergo this procedure, he has enough other stuff. You see what I'm saying? Tarek Skubal's got two Cy Youngs. He's about to be the richest pitcher on the planet. Let us call this something different so that we can give credit to whoever came up with the Skubal scope, the nano needle. Nano needle is even like kind of mid, like it's cool.
Yeah.
But is there a name?
Sounds like that's the technical term. Like that's actually the what technical, it is. So
sure. But can we name it after whoever came up with the nano needle? Like this is an opportunity to give someone credit that doesn't usually get credit. Right.
So I made this is very relevant. I made this case, I believe, when we were talking about the internal brace, which is the Tommy John alternate, which is essentially instead of a full, you know, reconstruction, is more of a strengthening. And Seth Maness, former Cardinals reliever, was the pitcher that got that. And I made the case that he deserved that kind of love because he does not have all the awards and accolades like Tarek Skubal. So I think that's the point that you're making. I will say, I think that Boris saw this as an opportunity and truly was like, I think I have a chance here to make this something that people are actually saying in like decades, the Skubal scope. I actually don't think he's wrong. I think there is a chance that this sticks, but I also think that your point is totally valid.
The company is called Arthrex that came up with this. But someone at Arthrex was like, what if a smaller needle? And if you were that person and you're listening to us, send us an email. We want to name this surgery after you moving forward. We want to shine a light on your brilliance and not on the brilliance of Tarek Skubal, who already has so much.
Well said. Last thing on this series, I will also just mention Cal Raleigh. If you're interested in very good baseball players rehabbing in high A on Sunday, Skubal was not alone. As Cal Raleigh played a game for the Everett Aqua Sox, and he's coming back from an oblique strain. I don't think he's going to play baseball this week. They are on a long road trip they were just in Detroit. Now they're in Baltimore and then they're in DC, but maybe their next homestand, Cal Raleigh could be back. And that's another one where it's just compelling because Cal Raleigh wasn't very good before he got injured. So what does he look like when he rejoins the Mariners lineup? Good to see him just back out there because honestly, that's even faster than I was kind of expecting. So that is an encouraging sign for the Seattle Mariners. All right, let's get to the Mets, who you seem pretty excited to talk about. Actually, the San Diego Padres is, I know who Jake's excited to talk about. The Mets take 2 out of 3 over the weekend in San Diego. They get a strong start from Christian Scott, who's been very impressive on Friday. That said, you know who looks impressive on the mound this year? Anybody facing the San Diego Padres, as their worst offense in baseball got even worse over the weekend. They did squeak out a close 3-2 victory on Saturday. Nolan McClain was good, but the Mets offense was also bad. And then on Sunday, Carson Bend, what a day. 5-for-5 with a homer and a triple at a leadoff spot. Mets win 7-3. Statistically, these have been the two worst offenses in baseball this season by OPS. I know the Giants were in that conversation. The Giants have been raking for a few weeks now. They like ridiculous offensive numbers. I think they're still in the near the bottom because of how bad it was to begin with. But in terms of the season that we're looking at and the totality of these first 65, 70 games, the Mets and the Padres, despite their enormous payrolls and all the famous baseball players on their team, have had the two worst offenses in baseball. This weekend showed us that one is worse than the other, as the Padres have now lost like 11 of 13, 12 of 14. They are still barely over 500 at 33-31, but they have fallen behind the Diamondbacks in the NL West standings by a half game. And they're just slipping and sliding. And Manny Machado knows what the problem is. So let's talk about that.
This is the rant of the year. It will not be topped. Manny Machado has been really, really bad at baseball. This season, in his life, he's been really good.
Amazing.
This year, he's been much less than amazing. That is the necessary context. And so Manny Machado, during like a normal media availability the other day, which actually started out with the purpose of it was like, hey, Nick Castellanos got DFA'd. Are you bummed? And he was like, yes, I am. That guy meant so much to this clubhouse. We were shocked. We're all really beaten up over it. It's like, okay, well, Nick Castellanos, no matter what stats you use, bad at baseball right now. Okay, whatever. This then devolves, the whole thing is kind of worth watching, but this then devolves into a conversation about the usefulness and the value of modern baseball analytics. I'm just going to read some quotes. There was one in here, Jordan, where he's like kind of being grouchy towards the media for asking questions about them playing poorly. But that's just usual. We believe in our team. You don't. Whatever. Let's talk about analytics. Okay. This came up because he was asked about Zach Wheeler feeding him a ton of heaters the other day in Philadelphia. Manny took the last one deep. But for the most part, Machado has really struggled against fastballs this year. Now, part of that is because his bat speed metrics are way down, which we'll get back to. So he's asked about this. It then devolves into the following quote. Quote, the game's evolving, man. It's definitely getting harder to play. It's definitely getting more strategic. I just wish we could get the analytics out of the way. I think there's too many stats out there. Too many stats. Way too many numbers. I don't even know half the stuff that goes up there. I look at the board sometimes and I even ask some of the guys, like, what is WCCVBB? Whatever it is. What are these names that are being created? So that's a banger. What is WCCVBB? WCCVBB sounds like a Division III like conference. Oh yeah, the WCCVBB playoffs are next week. Here's the deal, man. The key to this quote is Machado saying it's definitely getting harder to play. Do you agree with that, Jordan, that the game is getting harder to play?
I agree. This is look at, hey, honestly, I'm proud of him. He's being vulnerable. He's being open. He's being honest.
It is. It is getting harder to play. It is getting harder to play for Manny Machado. And the reason that it is getting harder to play for Manny Machado is that Manny Machado is almost 34. Age comes for us all. Manny Machado has, I think, 2 miles an hour of bat speed drop off over the last three seasons. He still swings it pretty fast, but that is a significant drop for a guy that has always had ridiculous bat speed. And it is not a surprise because this is what happens when you age. Jordan, do you know what might be able to help Manny Machado a little bit? Maybe adopting like some modern development. Maybe like thinking about why it is getting harder for Manny Machado to play. Now, I think that Manny Machado has some legitimate points here, or maybe not legitimate points, but gets at a couple of interesting things, right? The numbers and how they influence players, that's all that matters. How does the data influence player output, behavior, production, etc.? Whomever is in charge of explaining the value of numbers to Manny Machado is not doing a good enough job. That is part of it, right?
Yep.
Now, maybe that is a difficult thing. You know, you could lead a horse to water type beat. But I think that this gets at a dynamic that a lot of older players feel, that like they're being talked past and these numbers are confusing to them. But the ones that are willing to adapt are the ones that are going to survive. And Machado, who has a ton of money left on his deal, the way that he talks here makes me more concerned for his future than I was before he said this. Compare him to a guy like Paul Goldschmidt. Okay. Paul Goldschmidt is not the player he once was. We all agree about that, right? Paul Goldschmidt embraced bat speed training a couple of years ago. Paul Goldschmidt is a useful, productive member of the New York Yankees. He is crushing lefties. Part of that is because he is raging against the dying of the light. He is changing the way he thinks about the sport as he's gotten older in order to survive. Does Manny Machado still have some thunder left in the bat? Absolutely he does. Do I trust him to get enough out of it moving forward? I trust him less today than I did before he opened his mouth.
I think what's so interesting about it is in some ways it makes me appreciate Manny Machado's talent more. Because guess
what?
He was analytics.
Like, someone asked, like, what are you doing? He was like, I was C-ball, hit ball. It's like, man, you
well,
were
that's
seeing
what he says. That's what he wants to go back to, or that's what he's trying to do. And evidently that has worked en route to hundreds of millions of dollars and what was looking like a Hall of Fame career and could still be. I don't want to rule that
probably
out.
Still,
I mean,
is.
This is you know, we'll see how hard he tails off. But all these advanced numbers that he's talking and complaining about were not introduced in 2026. They have been surrounding him for much of his career. And the whole time, Manny Machado has been gifted enough to say, I don't care about that nonsense. I'm going up there and trying to hit the ball as hard as I can. And it has worked because his physical talents, his physical abilities have been as high as almost any player we've had in this generation, right? He is in the 99th percentile. That is what made Manny Machado so special. When he came up with Bryce Harper, same kind of thing. That is what made him so amazing. That is why he has had a near Hall of Fame career to this point. However,
from
to your
2020
point,
to 2025, yeah. Years in which analytics were very much in the game, Manny Machado has the 12th most home runs in the entire sport. Okay.
Sure.
Like,
oh, again,
brilliant. Just,
and that's
incredible player.
Later part of his career, right? So, but to your point, now we spin this forward and we say, all right, Manny, that's fine. We'll leave you alone if you want, but I know if there's one, you know, number you probably aren't loving, it's batting average, but maybe not. Maybe that's also too advanced. But he's hitting 169. This is the lowest mark of any qualified hitter. Sure, there's some bad luck in there. Not that he wants to hear about expected batting average, but ironically. But it's just like, okay, well, dude, you've been awful. You have a lower batting average than the guy that just got DFA'd, your pal Nick Castellanos. He knows he hasn't been good enough. His quotes, as any team struggling, and this relates to the Padres in general, is don't worry about it. We have the talent in this room. We're going to get it going. And that's fine. There's enough time for them to do that. But I do think your point is spot on that why do we think that this attitude is going to result in graceful aging for a guy that is still owed many, many dollars over many years? My gosh. 39 million a year through 2033.
Eight more?
Yeah. Seven more after this. So, yeah, it's a good point. It's interesting.
Who knows more about baseball, me or Manny Machado? Manny Machado. Like, I believe that, right? I also think that because of what Manny Machado has accomplished, his mindset is rigid and it is almost calcified, and he believes what he believes because it has worked his entire life. And so it's understandable. And it's almost like, for me, like a bit of a bummer. Like, when I was listening to this, it is so freaking funny, the WCCVBB, but it is a bummer because what do I want? I want Manny Machado to have a very entertaining, productive end to his career. And I just don't feel as good about that as I did before. Now, the last thing, Jordan, when he says WCCVBB, for those of you who are not stat heads like us, that is not a stat. WCCVBB, women's cross country volleyball.
I was going to say
volleyball,
I was going to say I was going to say, right, West Coast Conference Volleyball would be my best guess. If you just Google WCC VBB, now this might just be because I'm local, but I think this is as good an answer as any. I get the Wayne County Convention and Visitors Bureau. A lot of WCC Visitors Bureau, but that's not, I don't know what the second B would be there.
I'm now going to Google it and do minus Machado.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And I'm getting absolutely nothing. Westchester Community College Viking Book Bundle.
Perfect. Nailed it. No further questions. That's exactly what he was talking about. If I had a guess, the VB comes from maybe Induced Vertical Break and WCC, maybe WRC Plus. I don't know. Giving him too much credit. It's great. It's an all-timer. It is an all-time quote. We will try and come up with a... In fact, I would guess that someone who works for Fangraphs is currently trying to come up with an actual baseball stat that they can use WCC VBB as an acronym. So we will see if that ends up being true. One more series before we take a break and go fast. There was one more sweep this weekend, and that was the St. Louis Cardinals taking all three over the Reds. The short story with the Reds is that their bullpen has completely melted down. They rank last in almost every category. Some of that is they're missing some of their key guys like Pierce Johnson and Emilio Pagan, but it wasn't particularly stout to begin with, and it has just let them down over and over and over and over. Meanwhile, the Cardinals are taking advantage of such woes. Lars Nootbaar is back for St. Louis. He was injured coming back from foot surgery for the first part of the year. He is very interesting and important because he kind of represents the player that we will be also talking about come deadline time. He's under contract for another year. If the Cardinals, they've won four in a row. They're in second place. They have 40% playoff odds. I still think that Nootbaar could be someone that even if they are winning, they could still trade. Because he's only under contract for another year and a half. It's kind of like the Brendan Donovan situation where I think he's going to be pretty valuable. If there's not a lot of hitters out there, if he's a center fielder that can get on base, he's got to prove he can stay healthy and whatnot. I'm really curious where Lars Nootbaar, how he's playing, and then just where the Cardinals end up. Yeah, they are certainly a deadline team to watch as well.
I believe Lars Nootbaar is the only player on the Cardinals that has appeared in a playoff game for the Cardinals. And
that
compels me. That is not true. I apologize. God dang it, Jake. Nolan Gorman went one for one. He went one for one in the 2022 wild card round. I'm so embarrassed.
It's okay. Burleson was around. There's a couple guys, but I think the sentiment of what you're saying is actually still spot on, because this past offseason, if Lars Nootbaar was healthy going into the winter, I think he would have been traded. I really do.
Yeah.
But now he could be that, but because the Cardinals are like pretty decent.
But that's what's so interesting to him is that, like, when you think about the Cardinals and the Cardinal way and all this stuff, like, Nootbaar was raised in that. He's the one guy who was around, really around, for some of that. Like, he was on the 2021 team, right? Not just the 2022 team. 2021 team that lost on the Chris Taylor walk-off homer in the wild card game against the Dodgers. That 2021 team, Yachty, Paul Goldschmidt, Paul DeYoung, Harrison Bader, like, this is still Adam Wainwright. This is Carlos Martinez. He's a connection to a previous era.
Alex Reyes?
Of Cardinals baseball.
Alex Reyes.
Alex Reyes, who gave up that homer, right? Like, that's what we're talking about here. Okay. And so, for that reason, I want Lars Nootbaar to experience joy in St. Louis. And I think that this past weekend was like his first taste of that in a meaningful way. And it was really cool to watch. All right. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
When we get back,
do it.
We will go so fast. We'll go so fast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. See your eye to talk about Let's Go Fast.
faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Giants, 2 out of 3 over the Cubs, who are just not playing well right now. Edward Cabrera comes off the IL on Friday, and the Cubs allow 18 runs. Giants at 7 homers, score 18 on 19 hits. Cubs battle back on Saturday for a fun win. Like, when the Cubs get these wins, it's like, okay, good. Just do that all the time. PCA ties it down to their last out in the bottom of the ninth, and then win 3-2 and 10. But then the Giants win the finale in 10 innings in a game in which Jameson Taillon leaves early, but Javier Assad, the best pitcher on the planet, probably comes back, comes out of the pen and throws really well. But the Giants, they sneak out a win. They have won 4 of 5 and looking okay. Looking okay. I don't think they have enough to actually be good. I'm more worried about the Cubs than I am, like, encouraged about the Giants, I think.
I think that that is fair. Ben Brown is the truth. Let's go to the Yankees and Red Sox all the way down here in turbo mode. That's because they only played 2 games. Red Sox won on Friday. Ben Rice homered, but that was not enough. And then they did not play baseball on Saturday because it got rained out, which means we will have a bonus opportunity, a 4-game set at Yankee Stadium coming in late August. But for now, they will have to settle for these 2 games. Yankees do win on Sunday. Cam Schlittler was fantastic. Nice little bounce back there after last week's blip against Cleveland. Jazz hits a big homer. Yankees win 6-1. I will be seeing the New York Yankees this week here in Cleveland, as these teams who just played in New York will play again for a few games. So looking forward to seeing the New York Yankees up close.
Nats over D-backs in the Mike Soroka Bowl. Nats win the first 2. They hit 5 home runs on Friday, 2 from Luis Garcia, James Wood, CJ Abrams, Dalen Lyle. The Nats offense is actually good. We have now reached a point where it is not just cute, it is quality. They show up again in game 2. Zach Littell, 5 strong. Dylan Cruz with the catharsis blast, 432 Dude, feet to left.
That one been, was.
That one felt made me feel good for him.
Yes. Like, yes.
Since coming back up, he has kind of done this a similar thing to what he had been doing, which was hitting the ball really hard, being unlucky, and hitting it on the ground too much. He finally was able to elevate one with some sauce. Second home run since coming back, but this one was a tank. Nats can't finish off the sweep, though, as Soroka, the aforementioned Canadian, strong on Sunday. 7 innings, 1 run. The Diamondbacks win 5-1. They signed Max Kepler for some reason ahead of the World Cup, maybe just to get some German talent into the squad. He is suspended for 80 games after testing positive for PEDs. He still has to serve that suspension, I believe. The clock starts now.
No. See, that's the thing.
No?
Apparently, they worked it out that he's been serving it the whole time. I was confused by that, too. Now, he's still ineligible for the postseason, which is relevant. But as for where he fits on this roster, I guess they're short a left-handed bat. They traded away Jake McCarthy. I don't know. I'm not really... I have to figure out where exactly he fits on this roster. But he's still suspended for at least a little while. And I guess he'll be on the Diamondbacks at some point in the second half.
All right, Blue Jays, 2 out of 3 over the Orioles. Just this series was quite frustrating for the O's. They did win the first one. Mayo and Adley both hit homers off Trey Savage. Adley was a triple from the cycle. They won 13-3. Blue Jays win 6-4 the next 2 days. The Sunday game, the Orioles were up 4-0 and then just coughed it up in a really ugly 6th inning. Gunnar Henderson booted a routine ball and then made an odd play on a would-have-been double play where Ernie Clement avoided him and wasn't out of the baseline, and Craig Albernaz got mad. It was a weird call, but like, they wasted a good Shane Boz start and just not... The O's have been playing better. Like, this team has been better over the last couple of weeks. They're still just like a couple tweaks away from really getting hot. Should we be concerned about Vlad right now, or do you want to save that for Wednesday?
We'll talk about him at some point. I mean, I know we had our Jays pals on last week, and yeah, it's been a weird stretch for him. I just wanted to mention for Baltimore, like, I don't think we're talking enough about just how good Adley's been. Bisayo have been, I know Bisayo left the game injured. Hopefully he's okay. But Adley's been tremendous. And Shane Boz has also been really good now for about a
really
month.
Good.
And that's been really, really refreshing to see for them as well.
Marlins, 2 out of 3 over Rays in the Citrus Bowl. Tyler Zuber, first career save on Saturday. That is not the highlight, I understand. But I spent time with Tyler Zuber when I was covering ball in the Dominican. This is a grinder and a dude that I'm very happy for. He came in after Pete Fairbanks kind of... It was like the situation where the closer is bad in a way where they reach a certain pitch count. You have to just like bring someone else in. So they brought in Tyler Zuber and he got the job done. Then in Game 3, Sandy Alcantara was stellar. 7 innings, 1 hit. The Fish steal 4 more bases in that one. I believe they're leading baseball in steals attempted and succeeded, right? Like they've been just out of control.
I believe they have
76 baseballs. 76 baseballs. They've stolen 76 bags. The Brewers are in second with 67. The Giants are in last with 18.
Tampa's not playing very well. They have the Red Sox this week. Then they go to, this is fun. They're going to LA, Angels, then Dodgers. That's a fun little road trip.
It's the right order. They're slipping.
Still tied for first place, but it has not been a great couple of weeks for them. We will see how they do against Boston. Let's catch you up
Rangers.
On the Guardians. Oh, Guardians. Ooh, well, who did the Guardians lose or did the Rangers win?
The Rangers won, Jordan. They took Game 1 and Game 3 of this one. Jacob deGrom, starting on Sunday, this was win number 101 in his career, most compellingly for me. I believe the Guardians were the last team that he had yet to face in his career.
Yes.
He threw 6 scoreless. In this one, the Rangers hit 4 home runs, tallied 16 hits. They win big. The Guardians are good. I'm excited to see them go up against the Yankees. That'll be a fun series. Hopefully this Rangers offense, which has really struggled at home, can start to get going a little bit.
Congrats to Tanner Bibee, who logged his first win of the season in his 14th start, which was historic by some measures. He had thrown like 75 innings before getting his first win. Let's keep it in the AL Central, where the Royals take 3 out of 4 over Minnesota in the opportunity not heard round the world. This was just, I don't know. I mean, I guess Kansas City, this is you feel good about this because you're like, we're better than the Twins, right? We're better than the Twins, right?
Please.
Still behind them in the standings. But you make up some ground here, at least a little bit, taking 3 out of 4 in Minnesota. They can feel good about that. I guess the one interesting thing that happened this weekend was that Royce Lewis returned from AAA and is now playing second base for reasons that I don't totally understand. The Brooks Lee moved to third. Tristan Gray, Ryan Kreidler playing shortstop. I don't know what Minnesota's doing, but I'm glad that the Royals, who had much more real intentions of competing this year, were able to win the series.
Do you know that the Royals currently have the second lowest playoff odds in the American League per Fangraphs? Do you know who's third? Third lowest? Third lowest? The Houston Astros, who took 2 out of 3 over the weekend. Yeah, how about that?
Okay,
2 out of 3 over the weekend over the A's. Much needed series for them. Jose Altuve back off the IL. Lamont Wade Jr. is on this team now, everybody. He homered. They won 13-2. Tatsuya Imai was solid. Cade Morris made his big league debut for the A's and allowed 9 earned runs, including a Yordan Grand Slam. Hopefully he can forget that. Game 3, though, A's avoid the sweep. Gage Jump, 6 1/3 scoreless. Mm-hmm. He is a very interesting character to watch because he is like the first like A's pitcher. The A's have developed a lot of very interesting bats over the last number of years, many of whom have been productive at the big league level. This is like their first shot in this window at an arm. And so far, Gage Jump has been up to the challenge. Last series, Phillies over the White Sox, winning Game 1, losing Game 2, winning Game 3. Jacob Gonzalez, first career home run for the White Sox in Game 2. That is a player that I have been low on for a long time, but he has been outstanding this season in the minors. Hopefully he can get some run in the big leagues. Brandon Marsh deserves a longer conversation. They moved him to the cleanup spot and he's just hitting behind Bryce Harper now. He has been one of the best players in the Phillies. For their bounce back up to being in contention, he leads all Phillies position players in wins above replacement. He is probably going to be an all-star. He's playing more against left-handed pitching. I think he has the highest batting average in the sport right now.
Yep. Sure does.
He does?
Sure does.
Passed out of Lopez. And so, like, Brandon Marsh, he's always had just unreal physical ability and is obviously one of our favorite characters in the game. To see him put it together this year has been really, 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 really fun. That's baseball. Any other baseball?
We did it.
I guess college baseball?
Nope. No, there is a lot of college baseball going on. That's World, for sure. We will have
World Cup
our
baseball.
World Cup starts this week. So many the sports. World, I know so some of
the World Soccer Classic.
That's what they call it. No Venezuela in this one, sadly. But yeah, no, this is good to have you back. Welcome back. I know you're
going to be back.
I believe headed to Pittsburgh. I will be seeing the Yankees and Guardians. Very busy week ahead, as always. So welcome back, Jake Mintz. Hopefully, thank you. Hopefully you enjoyed your vacation. Hopefully everyone didn't
Thanks
hate the show without
it.
Him. And we will thank you to Andrew Hartz and TJ Brassel. Shouts out to TJ Brassel for producing this pod. And Andrew Hartz, as always. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday.